Good evening, James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for January 26, 2023. Many topics to cover tonight, a lot of interesting things. I'll be talking about comets. I'll be talking about my new book a little bit, some additional information. And if you haven't read it, it's available on my webpage. If you put in an order and use these coupon code that I'm going to give you for 10% discount on the water filters, you get the book for free. And so let's see what else. Some issues about comets. First of all, just to mention, I was on a couple of shows this week. It would be Monday night, the 23rd. I was on with Pastor Butch Paugh for 1 hour, talking about a myriad of topics. And then Tuesday morning, 8 a.m. Central Time, I was on the Power Hour with Dave Krieger. And that was a kind of a show where we really jumped into some topics dealing with nuclear energy, the wing generator, hydrogen, other topics like that. It was a really good, fast-moving interview. So anyway, listen to that. I believe it's on Rumble. I think he said some other platforms, but by now it should be posted on Rumble. And once again, that would be the 24th, Tuesday a.m., the Power Hour, with Dave Krieger. And I just mentioned about the water filters. If you use the coupon code JMCC, you will get a 10% discount on water filters on my webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. And you'll receive the book, the new book, The Real History of Man, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. You'll get that for free. We'll just email it to you along with your order, but you have to use that coupon code so that we know that that's where you're ordering from. Okay, next on the list here, Ukraine. Boys and girls, grandmas and grandpas, and everybody in between, this situation has to be resolved. For the U.S. to be sending long-range missiles to the border of Ukraine and just aggravating this war, where's the United Nations? That's my question. Where's our wonderful international agency, the United Nations? Let us look at actually what's going on here. The United Nations is a controlled entity. It's part of the New World Order. The Putin has gone against the New World Order. And the real issue going on with Ukraine is that Eastern Donbas region, the New World Order was moving a large number of people into the Ukraine from another little country called Israel. And they were going to go into Eastern Donbas region and simply exterminate the people and put a whole new group of people in there who are claiming that that's their new homeland. That's what's going on there. So that's why the UN is not getting involved. That's why the U.S. fighting another proxy war, let's call it like it is, but this is on the brink of World War III. And the reason is because Putin knows that if he sends his tanks in, his personnel, that a lot of them will just be smoked because the United States has already put in a lot of the ground-to-ground, ground-to-air missile systems. And so it gets to the point where, okay, the only other option is nuclear weapons. And it's being pushed and pushed to the point where they will sacrifice, I don't know, whatever, to gain this region for these people that want to move into the Donbas region and exterminate the people who are currently living there. So that's what's going on. No matter how you cut it, no matter what side you take, nobody is a winner. Nobody is winning. There's no such thing as winning a war. Everybody, including the people in the United States, are losers. And this could come back for the first time, literally, since Pearl Harbor, where a foreign entity has attacked the United States. This is exactly how World War II started, where the United States was antagonizing Japan, who, by the way, had built up this massive military might, much larger than that of the United States. Japan had a massive navy. and the biggest ships, the well-trained air forces, etc., much more than the United States. It's only because of the United States' momentum and years of warfare and building up the war program during those war years that the United States was finally able to push the pendulum in the other direction. But if it weren't for something like a chance guess by a guy named McCluskey flying an aircraft carrier, I think he was with the bomber group, fighter planes, World War II fighter planes that were dive bombers. If it weren't for this guy's basically flipping a coin, he went north, and they were about out of gas. They were looking for the Japanese fleet. They knew it was somewhere there. And he came back and was able to locate the Japanese fleet. This is long before satellite imagery or other forms of detecting where the enemy is. And at that point, the Battle of Midway ensued, and the rest is history. The United States sank four of the aircraft carriers of the Japanese fleet, and the Japanese retreated. If it weren't for that, the whole World War II in the Pacific may have been different. But that's really the last time that anybody has made a move to attack. And you can say 9/11, I don't consider that an attack on the U.S. That was an inside job to bring in the other steps of the New World Order. But anyway, the whole point is, you can bicker over that too, but the whole point is, in Ukraine, this has to stop. And the leadership in the United States, the Congress, and the executive branch, let's put it that way, is moving on a proxy war. That's the only way you can put it. The end result is not going to be good for anybody. There are not going to be any winners in this. There will only be losers. And by the way, we were talking Tuesday morning. I was talking with Dave Krieger on the Power Hour about the whole situation. And the first thing that Russia did in the Ukraine was went in and destroyed the electrical infrastructure. And if they did that in the United States, and there's many ways to do it because our grid is completely unprotected. That was another topic we talked about on the Power Hour show Tuesday morning, that literally it would cripple the United States overnight because they don't have any way to replace transformers. They don't have any, the infrastructure would just take the United States down to its knees because we depend integrally in electricity. Electricity is the backbone, one of the backbones of the United States. And if it took out major cities, it would just be, nothing would work. I mean, people would be dying in the streets of starvation. There's a statistic relative to New York City and other big cities, but I heard this about New York City, and this is many years ago, that New York City has a 3-hour supply of food. So you're talking about the restaurants, the food stores, the food outlets, whatever. In 3 hours, if the trucks stop flowing into New York City to stop to resupply the food supply, in 3 hours it would be gone, and there would be no food left. Literally, all the food would be gone in 3 hours. That's the supply chain of New York City for food. And without electricity, none of that would happen. There would be no way to pump gas or diesel. There would be no refrigeration. There would be no way to keep the grocery stores open because literally within an hour, a couple hours, they would be devoid of all product. That's how fast things would go down if there were no electricity in the United States. Very few people would be able to survive very long without electricity. If you're living in a house, I don't care if you're in the country, small town, big city, anything in between, without electricity, your furnace is not going to work. It's wintertime, then your pipes would break. You would not have water. It would be a major national disaster overnight. This is what is looming if the issue of Ukraine is not settled immediately. And the issue is that all of the leaders, so-called leaders of this country, are all bought and paid for and owned by by foreign entities, and they're only doing the bidding of somebody else. They're not doing anything in the interest of you, the American public. Jumping to another topic, over the last couple of weeks, I've been talking about statistics of divorce, of the percentage of teachers in the school, of various topics related to social issues of today. And one that I wanted to add to that list, you'll have to go back and listen to the shows in past weeks for the explanation of what I was talking about, but I wanted to add to the list of statistics that the young women coming out of single-parent homes where the mother is the sole provider, the sole adult in the house, the young women are coming out of this with low self-esteem. That means they're not secure in themselves. They don't know really who they are. A lot of them have attitude issues towards men because of this. They simply don't have men in their life that in what I'm talking about is the father in the house to balance the situation in the house, because the mother and father bring, whether you like it or not, whether whatever your belief system is, the mother and father bring different attributes to the home in terms of stability. And so, and kids need that. And when kids don't have that, when a divorce occurs, the father has to leave the house within. I heard this statistic. A guy was talking on a YouTube channel. He said, within 1 year, 40% of the fathers lose contact with their children. Within 2 years, 60% of the fathers lose complete contact with their children. And so very soon after a split up of a marriage in the United States, the father is simply out of the picture. And believe me, there might be a secondary man in the picture, but they're not going to take part in the upbringing of the kids as would be if the true biological father was in the house. It's simply the way it is. There might be rare cases where it works out good and the new father is a benefit, maybe better than the other father may have been or whatever. But in general, I'm talking about in general, women are growing up with low self-esteem. And so this is 50% of the women. And like I said, 80% of the teachers in high school are women, so they don't have any male counterpart there to balance the situation. So we have a country with women growing up with low self-esteem. We need strong women. We need women who are confident in themselves, that know, that have set boundaries. And so the women growing up with low self-esteem a lot of time are susceptible. And this cycle of trying to get married because they think it's going to bring happiness, and then the divorce, and this cycle just feeds on itself. And so anyway, the thing I want to simply do is make people aware of this. I was shocked by the statistics. And I saw a YouTube video, and these guys go out on the, a college campus or the street, and they ask other young people, what's the biggest problem of today? And some of them said, oh, the gas situation or the, political situation, something. But this one young lady looked a little bit timid, and I just imagine she is from a broken home. But she said the biggest problem in the United States are broken homes, where the kids are being raised, in a broken home. She said that's the biggest problem in the United States. And that there, when you get up to the top 10 biggest problems, it's very difficult to say one is number one and there's number two and number three. But if you go into the top 10 category, almost any of them could be number one, especially on a personal basis. And her number one issue problem in the United States, and this was from probably an 18-year-old young girl in this YouTube video, the biggest problem to her was broken homes. And I agree. It is a major problem because the root of society is the family. The United States has a complete devastation of the family unit, and it's under attack. It's getting worse. Okay, next topic. This is one of these complete blanket broadcasting, blanket news coverage topics that is just coming out, and these three-blade wind turbines all over the country are just starting to fall over. And they asked General Electric, who made some of these, what's going on, and they just didn't have an answer. How come these supposedly professionally engineered wind systems are just falling over? And, I mean, it would be a little bit dangerous if your house happens to have in the backyard one of these things, or you live on a farm and you're out there working your farm and one of these things falls over on you and your tractor. You know, what do you do? But anyway, the question is, what's really going on here? This is something I predicted back in 2010. I wrote my book, McCanny Wing Generator, World Energy Project, with the addendum that was the myth of alternative energy, where I explained that three-blade wind turbines and solar panels will be pushed. They'll suck up all of the government money, all of the money available, and then when all the money is gone, General Electric has taken all of its profit, and Siemens from Germany has taken all of the profits for these three-blade wind turbines, then everybody will come out and say, these things don't work. We got to get back to that good old General Electric Central Power Company power. And that's the scam. That's always been the scam. That is the scam. And it's what you call controlled opposition. So General Electric and Siemens' main core business is with generators and the maintenance of the generators for Central Power Company power. And so these are coal, nuclear, or they could be, there's a tremendous growth in natural gas generators for central power. And so that's what they want to get back to. They have a tremendous investment. That's their future. So why would they build a wind turbine that works and cancels their main central core business of Central Power Company power and support and equipment, selling the equipment? And of course, it doesn't make any business sense. And of course, they're not going to do that. So right now, all of a sudden, all of these wind turbines are just magically falling over, and it's in the news. And so the end result of all these articles is, see, it doesn't work. Wind doesn't blow all the time, so it never will work. Wind isn't a solution, so we got to get back to General Electric power. Wow. Well, of course, I have my wing generator, which does work. And that's one thing Dave Krieger was asking me on the Power Hour on Tuesday. He says, James, what about the ability to get this wing generator produced on a large scale? And I was talking about the fact that it can be built large, where three of the large ones could power the entire city of San Francisco, for example. And to add two more, you could convert the entire cities of San Francisco and the Bay Area to electric automobiles, was simply putting two more of the large wing generators out there on the west side of the bay, because the wind blows like crazy there. There's all this wind, and they're not making use of it. I remember I was out there a number of years ago. I was on the north side of the Bay Bridge, and you walk up, and there's a park up there. And you can go up there, and I mean, you gotta lean into the wind when you walk. And if you're walking away from the wind, you have to lean backwards. Otherwise, it'll literally blow you over. That's how much wind there is there. And it's like that all the time. San Francisco has one of the oldest sailing clubs in the country because of the tremendous wind in San Francisco Bay. So anyway, all of this wind available, and after hundreds of thousands of these three-blade wind turbines being installed, they simply don't work. And that was the plan all along. Put something out there, piece of junk that doesn't work. It's done by GE and Siemens. Do you think they knew this? Of course they knew it. They'd have to be retarded. Either they're criminally stupid or they're criminally negligent. Which one? Take your pick. So anyway, and I've seen this story pop up, and many people have sent me variations of this story from different news outlets, and so that's why I know there's been blanket coverage. Every time or any time you have blanket coverage on a topic, it is for a reason. It's planned, controlled opposition disinformation. That's what it is. And like I say, I predicted this well over 12 years ago. Publicly, I knew it 20 years ago. I knew this was going to come down and eventually be the situation. I could smell it. As a scientist, I knew from the beginning that three-blade wind turbines and solar would never, ever solve the world energy problem. And then you just look at who's promoting it, General Electric and Siemens. The two main core business, their core business is central power company power and the equipment and the maintenance of that equipment. Anyway, you may want to check out my book just to show that I'm not blowing smoke here. But as I say, the book was published in 2010. It's called McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project. And there I also talk about the wing generator and the development of the wing generator and how I designed it. And here we are 12, 13 years later. And let me just tell people this about shadow banning. Long before anybody else was shadow banned on YouTube, I was shadow banned. In other words, if you type my name any place, pick any YouTube video or technology or innovation or wind energy, whatever it is, the electric universe, whatever it is, put my name in or put my webpage in there, and you will, first of all, if you go back to see your posting, your blog note below the video, you will find it there. If you come in from the same MAC address, the same device that you put the note there. But if you go search for that under any other MAC address, any other device, you will find that it's not there. And so anyway, that's been going on for a long time. They simply don't want this technology to be recognized because they don't want solutions. Okay, on to the next topic. Oh, this is an interesting story. This floored me. Now, I've been to Machu Picchu. It's in the Andes Mountains in the country of Peru, outside of Cusco. And, of course, you have to ride on a little train to get there. And the day I was there, I actually have posted pictures on my webpage from my trip to Machu Picchu. Beautiful, beautiful day. I mean, there was literally not a cloud in the sky. And I had a guide. I was with a group of people, had a guide. And the guide, after about two-thirds of the way through the day, because typically in the mountains, sometimes it's sunny in the morning, but by 10 in the morning, the clouds are building. By 2 in the afternoon, it's drizzling and raining at least. Maybe it rains hard. And that's the weather cycle of a typical day in Machu Picchu. And so anyway, the day I was there, it was blue sky, wall-to-wall blue sky, mountain-to-mountaintop, the entire firmament, as the ancients used to call it, was solid blue. Not even a little cloud in the sky. And about two-thirds way through the day, the guide says he grew up there, right off of Machu Picchu as a Peruvian citizen. He was a guide there for 10 or 15 years. He said, I've never seen this, where you have an entire day of complete no clouds. And I thought, wow, once again, I think the guy upstairs is guiding me. It was a gorgeous day up in the mountains. And I had some friends that went up and climbed up some of the mountains. And I'm not very good at that. When I was young, I used to climb stuff. Insanity, you know, but I don't do that anymore. I just try and keep a little bit safe. But anyway, yeah, there's paths that were built. The Inca Highway, of course, leads to Machu Picchu. That comes through the mountains to some of the other Inca settlements. And there are hundreds and hundreds of Inca settlements out there in the countryside. They only allow the tourists into a few of them. But anyway, I was at Machu Picchu. And recently, this is just like within the last few days, I get these updates from a woman who she's an airline stewardess, or I think she was the head of the airline stewardess union. I'm not sure. But anyway, I get all of these updates from the airline industry. And the update was that they have closed Machu Picchu indefinitely. They have closed it, and they had hundreds and hundreds, close to 500 tourists there that they had to get out. And there's some kind of big protests going on there. I don't know what it's about. I don't know what's going on or who's protesting or what they're protesting for, but it's enough that they had to somehow find a way to get these tourists out of there. Now, that would be a problem. And it took them days to get these people back to Cusco. So anyway, Machu Picchu is closed, and I don't know, well, like the Nazca Lines location is very open. You don't need a little railroad train to take you there. It's right off one of the major two-lane highways that run through Peru. Peru doesn't really have four-lane highways, especially out in the middle of nowhere, like the Nazca Plains. But I don't know what's going on in Peru. I know that in Lima, when I was there, I was there 7 years ago, something like that. Lima has had a lot of crime, and it's getting worse. It's getting a lot worse. Street crime, just, you know, robberies, kidnappings, those kind of crimes. The same kind of thing that's going on in Mexico right now. You know, gangs, gang crime, things like that, just making it generally dangerous to even walk out on a street. That was going on then. It's gotten a lot worse. But I don't know what this uprising is at Machu Picchu and what's causing it. The information I got did not talk to that. So anyway, I think if you're planning to go to Machu Picchu, just a little bit about my trip there. I went there as a tourist, and that's when I made my discovery that the Nazca Lines are really transmitting and receiving antennas. It's a big antenna complex. And I have a white paper on my webpage called the Nazca Lines Mystery Solved, something like that. It's on my webpage, part of my book library. And flew into Lima, rented a car, which by itself was an experience because the car rental agency had two cars. And I got the better of the two cars. So I put on 3,000 kilometers in 11 days. So from Lima, went up into the mountains and all of these little towns. Peru is very different. People don't have cars. They don't have motorcycles that are typical of third world countries. They either walk or take public transportation. When you come into a little town up in the mountains, there might be one vehicle there. It's probably a public vehicle. You don't find motorcycles all over the place. But these beautiful valleys where the river flows through and the people do hand agriculture, it looks like it's all planted by machine, but it's all done by hand. Perfectly aligned rows of corn. And they grow the food there for the local community. And a lot of these communities may only have a few hundred people living there, out in the middle of nowhere. And then you drive up through the mountains, stark mountains where there's not much growing at all. In fact, nothing growing for 50 miles maybe. Then you come to the next little town. Then I went to Cusco, spent a number of days in Cusco, and of course went to the various museums and churches and Inca sites, etc., and then went to Machu Picchu, which is out there, and then went to some other Inca sites, these giant steps where I felt like a little kid stepping up in these, and at very high altitudes. And so anyway, climbing around these Inca ruins, and then to Lake Titicaca, and spent a number of days there, went out on the lake, went on the little island where we stayed with some of the indigenous people who live on this floating island, the reed boats, etc. And then took the car and made a beeline to the coast of Peru. So this is on the border with Bolivia. And then went north along the coastline. And I've often said this, that it makes Big Sur of California look like a Saturday afternoon picnic. The coastline of Peru is absolutely stunning, and I don't think many people have driven it in its entirety. But you come to some places, the road is almost completely covered with sand. And you come around a bend, and I think, man, when is this going to end? You come around a bend, and you can see 20, 30 miles in the distance, the road just winding around the side of the mountains into the distance. then you come around the corner there and think, well, when is this going to end? That you another 20, 30, 50 miles into the distance, you can see that road just cutting along the mountainside all the way back to Lima. And if you look at my paper, the Nazca Lines paper, the very last page, I have a picture of the sea food. It's like a region where the seafood restaurants are, but it's also where the boats come in with the seafood. So on one side, it's all of the seafood shops where you can buy fresh seafood. In the same parking lot, like on the other side, are the restaurants. And oh my goodness, the just unbelievable seafood. So anyway, that was my trip to Peru. And the benefit of that was this wonderful discovery of the Nazca Lines, that they are an ancient antenna complex to signal, literally to signal extraterrestrial, extrasolar system signaling. And then, of course, the discoveries that there are many places like this on planet Earth. So I have a few addendums, another one coming out very soon, relative to the Nazca lines, Nazca and Palpa lines. Palpa is just north of Nazca on that plain same ridge system. And the Palpa lines appear to be much older. Okay, so at any rate, next topic, I'm going to be talking about comets. A few weeks ago, I talked about Comet K2. The designation is, I believe it's C-2017 K2, I believe is the designation. And I talked about the fact that it is down below the solar system right now. And it's going to come up through the plane of the planets in January of 2025. And Jupiter is on its orbit coming around. So in April, in fact, the exact date, the exact alignment is April 25th, 2025. But in that time frame, probably a month before, a month after, this comet is going to have a direct electrical alignment with the twin star Jupiter. I'm not going to call it a planet. It's not a planet. Jupiter is the twin star of our sun. And I believe we're going to see some fireworks, and I think that it's going to jolt Jupiter to where we might see some extenuated circumstances for the Great Red Spot and other cyclonic storms. Jupiter has 13 bands. I believe it's 13 bands, counter-rotating bands, where the Earth has five. We have our western equatorial electron current sheet that goes westerly around the planet, and then we have the two temperate climate current sheets that go easterly around the mid-northern hemisphere and the mid-southern hemisphere. And then at the poles, we have the what is called the ring current that goes in once again in the counterclockwise direction. In the clockwise direction, if you're looking from the north down on Earth, it actually goes, and that's a westerly direction. And those are some of the main factors dealing with our plasma magnetic field. Okay, so anyway, this comet, K2, as it is commonly called, is a big comet. It was the farthest comet ever discovered in the solar system, and now is coming through the solar system. Somebody criticized me, I think it was last September, it crossed through the ecliptic plane. And the belief was of this listener that it caused a massive solar flare, where there was coincident solar flares. But it turns out that Earth was not on the side of the sun where this flare went out. And the comet was in a different position also. It was not co-aligned with Earth or anything else. But anyway, be that as it may, last September, I was doing my year-long monologue regarding the discoveries of my work, and I did not want to break that because that was a year-long effort to encapsulate my work in a historical, kind of a verbal document, so to speak. Okay, so anyway, April 25th, 2025, Comet C-2017 K2 will cross the ecliptic plane out close to the orbit of Saturn, but Saturn will not be near that. and it'll come up through the ecliptic. And actually, 2 months later, in April, 3 months later, I'm sorry, in April of 2025, K2 and Jupiter will have this perfect electrical alignment. So I'm expecting some reaction both with the comet being excited and Jupiter, and maybe some corresponding solar activity. But the other planets, including Earth, are not going to be involved in this unless a resulting solar flare comes out and hits Earth. That would be a secondary effect. So anyway, something to keep an eye on. And if I forget, if you remember close to that time, if we're all still here, there's no nuclear war over Ukraine, and we're all still here, give me a heads up, because I have so many things going on, I sometimes forget about these types of things, especially so far in the distant future. And I'll take a look at it again and make sure that the people that I know with telescopes have a visibility of this, because a lot of times when I make these predictions and the people in the international astronomical community hate when I'm right. And so they try and snuff out this information. But the other comet that is very interesting, now this is very, 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 very interesting, is a comet I've talked about before. It's C2022E3 is the designation. It is the green comet that's visible to the naked eye right now up in the night sky. And you can find the, you know, star charts on the internet, etc., to tell you where to look. The interesting thing is, in the last couple of days, this thing has sported a sunward spike. And wow, is it amazing to see the backpedaling going on. They're trying to minimize this. They're not allowing any photographs of amateurs on the internet. I looked all over. I did searches. Typically with a comet, especially a comet that's naked eye visible, one that is that has had this much publicity, and that it's a green comet, etc., one would find thousands of photographs of this. As all of these amateurs are out there, they have their amateur telescopes and very good equipment, near professional in a lot of cases, posting photographs of these comets, and a lot of times comets of much less note, much less notoriety. They're publishing photos, thousands of photos on the internet. There are none. So that tells you something. And of course, they don't want this to be widespread, that this comet is developing a sunward spike. And of course, the standard reason for what they call anti-tails, and this started back in the 1950s, I think it was 1957, that a comet called Arend-Roland, just like it sounds, Arend-Roland, R-O-L-A-N-D, came into the solar system and sported a very intense sunward spike. And of course, this was right after the initial wave of the astronomical community trying to prove Velikovsky wrong. This is long before Carl Sagan took up this torch and led the victory against Velikovsky, who talked about Velikovsky talking about electrical discharges in the solar system. And here's a comet that has this amazing intense electrical spike heading towards the solar sun direction. So this woman came up with an excuse, and she said, "Oh, well, that's because it's just an optical illusion. It's a thin type two tail," which is like a little plasma tail that is directly anti-sunward, in other words, directly on the opposite side of the sun, which, by the way, is part of the electrical discharge. That's the electron stream that's part of the electrical discharge of the solar capacitor. But be that as it may, they made up this excuse that it was an optical illusion. There was really a tail pointed away from the sun, but just because of the viewing angle, you could not see the... It appeared to be in the sunward direction. Well, that was just bogus. I've gone back and looked at the geometry, and the argument did not make sense any then. I was back in, I think, 2004, I had a comet viewing program where there were two comets that came into the solar system. they were nearly sun-grazing comets, but we had a beautiful broadside view to these comets. So I set up a viewing program where I made a description, and you can still find this, by the way, on my webpage. It's the amateur comet viewing program, and I set up an email for people to email their photographs. And the idea was that on very specific dates when these comets came across the ecliptic, they both had a very good probability of having sunward spikes. And the idea being that being a broadside view of the comet, there's no way that a sunward spike would be an optical illusion of a type 1 tail that's truly anti-sunward, but only appearing to be in the sunward direction. That thing got shut down so fast. My webpage was hacked. My email accounts were hacked. And then NASA magically started its own viewing program where they filtered and censored amateur. They did the same thing. They copied what I did. They went out and they solicited amateurs to send them photographs. And people who were sending me photographs got attacked, literally, verbally, and basically told not to deal with me. So they basically shadow banned my program, instituted their own, and then derailed it. So anyway, but now we have a clear-cut case where this is a visible to the naked eye comet. It's up in the night sky right now, and lo and behold, it has a sunward spike. So they run out and they get the professional astronomers to come up with the same excuse. And let me see if I can quick pull that up, and I will read what they're talking about just to give you a flavor, 2023, what the clowns in the standard astronomical community are talking about. But just before I do this, let me point out that this right now, the comet where it is right now, is a perfect broadside view. And so you can't use that argument, because if the tail were sticking away from the comet in the anti-sunward direction, it would be visible to the anti-sunward direction, to the right side. The comet is, the visible situation is the sun is to the left, down below the horizon, and the comet is up in the sky with the tail pointing off in the right direction, going up in the sky. And we're looking absolutely broadside to this. In a few days, that broadside view will go away. But right now, with the visible sunward anti-tail or spike, it is, in fact, directly towards the sun. So let me quick pull this up. Okay, just give me a minute here. I've got the article here. This is, by the way, from Microsoft, which I'm not sure the relationship between Newsweek, but it's actually a Newsweek article from, this would have been from the 23rd. The title of the article, if you want to go look at this yourself, the title of the article is Green Comet ZTF, ZTF as in Frank, develops strange anti-tail pointing in wrong direction. Like, look at the disinformation right in the title. It's in the wrong direction, because tails of comets are supposed to point away from the sun. So anyway, I'm going to read this just to, and of course, you people are familiar with my work. You understand that comets are not dirty snowballs, that this is pure disinformation. And anyway, I'm going to read this. And this is also about the green comet. Remember, it's a color green. It says, the unusually green-hued comet, and by the way, that is not unusual. A lot of comets have that green hue. It's just that you don't see it too prominently. Okay, also known as ZTF C2022E3, developed a strange and rare tail yesterday, pointing towards our sun rather than trailing out behind it. Then they show a picture of a comet that is not the comet, and it's a stock comet photo that somebody pasted in here. Oh, how stupid, when you can have actual real pictures of the actual real comet. Continuing to read, it says, this is known as an anti-tail and appears to point in the opposite direction to the usual comet tail, seemingly breaking the laws of physics. It sounds like Scotty from, Star Trek. Remember Scotty? But Captain, I cannot change the laws of physics. Anyway, there's a Twitter here. Okay, continue reading. Here we go. On with the article. It says, Comet ZTF, a green-colored comet currently approaching the central solar system due to fly past Earth on its journey toward the sun, also has a clear traditional tail facing away from the sun, which has been visible during its long approach towards us. The anti-tail, however, is a brief anomaly caused by a strange optical illusion. No, it is the sunward spike. It's part of the electrical discharge of the comet, and it's truly a sunward spike. It's in the sunward direction, but they're lying to you here because they're, of course, the person writing this is an ignorant journalist, which is the worst kind. But they go back to this 1950 Comet Aaron-Rowland explanation that it only looks that way. Okay, I'm going to continue to read here. So just sniff and that the utter putrid smell of the article here. Okay, reading on, it says, a comet is like a dirty snowball. Keith Horn, a professor of astronomy at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, told Newsweek, comets and planets both orbit the sun, but unlike the circular orbits of planets, comets follow highly elliptical orbits. Okay, well, that's true, but he continues, said, comets spend most of their time on the outskirts of the solar system, but once per orbit, they zoom in close to the sun and then head out again. Well, kind of true. Not all comets do that. But at any rate, as it says, these are all standard textbook explanations. And then he says, as they approach the sun, the solar radiation heats the comet surface, evaporating dust and ice. Okay, total misinformation from a tier 2, probably a tier 3 level scientist that they're getting to quote here. Get down through some of this. Now listen to this. He says, this leaves it with lots of loose particles, both charged and neutral, that come away from it while it is moving. Ian Whitaker, a senior physics lecturer in physics at Nottingham Trent University in the UK, told Newsweek, the neutral particles come off in a cone behind the comet as it moves, a bit like being behind a big truck on a motorway while it's raining. All the excess water hits whatever is directly behind it. The charged particles will do the same unless there are any electric or magnetic fields nearby. Now, what do you mean? This is bizarre. This statement here is more than bizarre because it sounds like in space, oh, no, there just happens to be an electric or magnetic field nearby. How bizarrely stupid. Because all of outer space is filled with electric and magnetic fields. But of course, it seems like he's trying to dabble in this, but then deny it. So I'll read this again. This clown says, the charged particles will do the same unless there are any electric or magnetic fields nearby. The sun itself has a magnetic dipole like the Earth and has a magnetic field flowing out into the solar system, so charged particles coming off the comet are picked up by this magnetic field and sent directly away from the sun, anti-sunward. So he says, okay, the charged particles go out in this anti-sunward tail. And he goes, this forms the traditional backward-facing tail streaming out from behind the comet. Reading onwards, he says, the third comet tail is made up of neutral particles, but is not actually traveling towards the sun. It is just the relative position of the comet, Earth, and sun. Now, here's where the going back to the 1950s explanation comes in. He says, if we go back to the analogy of the truck traveling in a lot of surface water, the spray comes out, mostly goes behind, but in a slight cone shape. If we now were in front and look back, where we would see the main spray hitting the car behind, but a slight amount either side of the truck, where the edge of the cone is. The apparent third tail, the apparent third comet tail is the same thing. We are seeing neutral particles flowing away from the comet in a cone. And from where we are in Earth, we just see both edges of this cone. So it looks like two tails when it is really one. So he's giving the explanation of this optical illusion. The only problem is this is a sing-song answer from the astronomy Tier 3 textbook repeater. The only problem is when you look at the actual orbit of the comet, which I did, the comet is perfectly broadside to us, perfectly broadside, when it developed this tail. That means we're not out in front of it. We're not looking back at it as in his truck analogy. We're looking broadside. So the sunward anti-tail is, in fact, sunward. It is, in fact, sunward. Okay, so, it is so bizarre to see these Tier 3 scientists representing astronomical viewpoints, but as soon as you peel back that first onion layer, there's nothing there. There's no onion. That's just a peel. Okay, so now the next is according, this is in the same article, it says, according to Christopher Consalise, a professor of astrophysics at the University of Nottingham in UK, this is an optical illusion caused by the strange alignment of the comet. And so anyway, they go on and discuss this issue, but disinformation at its best. And as I said, if you looked at the comet on the 23rd of January, you can pull this up. You can look at the orbit itself if you're adept at this. JPL has a comet a simulator. I have my own simulator, which is much better quality. But if you pull it up and scan and look at the relationship, if you go into a plane of the Earth, this comet and the Sun, if you look at that plane from the side, you will see that the comet, in fact, is completely broadside to our view, which means that the sunward spike does not fit this old, broken record mime that they're trying to put forward here. Total disinformation. And you would think that professional or so-called professional astronomers would be at least astute enough to pull up the orbit and look at it and make the determination that what they're saying is complete BS. But nope, they just rattle it off, sing-song, textbook answer, nothing to see here, folks, move right along. Okay, just another quick note about this comet. In a few days, on February 10th, this comet will be crossing the ecliptic, going down through the plane of the planets, through the plane of Earth's orbit, but the Earth will not be, the Earth will have moved along in its orbit, and so there's no real expected activity from this comet. Mercury, Venus, and Mars, the other inner solar system planets, are not going to be in any kind of electrical alignment when this happens. So I'm not expecting anything big to happen because of that comet crossing the ecliptic, but just for your information, it will happen on February 10th, this comet crossing the ecliptic. Okay, so one last topic to cover here tonight. I'm going to talk a little bit about my new book and the fact that you can get it for free if you want. If you make a purchase of any water filter or any of the other products on the jmccsci.com webpage, the water filter page to go directly there is jmccwaterfilters.com. And if you use the coupon code JMCC, you get a 10% discount, and you'll get the book for free. So anyway, if you order anything off the JMCCSCI.com webpage, we'll automatically send you the new book. And so that's the deal of the week, so to speak. But my new book, it's called The Real History of Man and Earth, Myths, Magic, and Mayhem. And it's really a timely book. It's something I think everybody should read because it was sparked by the fact that there's a massive disinformation campaign going on in the world, but mainly in the United States and the United Kingdom, trying to state that the Earth was drastically affected 12,000 years ago by a comet hitting Earth. And so, anyway, I talked a little bit about this on my show with my interview with Dave Krieger on Power Hour Tuesday morning. But the ideas that that is being presented in this disinformation campaign, it's so bizarre that, for example, what they're trying to convince people is that the people, millions of people that lived in these ancient cities that have been earthed, like Göbekli Tepe in Turkey or these cities along the coastline of Peru, that somehow the people abandoned them, not only abandoned it, but they took all trace of human existence and removed it. We don't know where it went to. And then they took and covered the cities physically with dirt and hid them and then left without a trace. Absolutely bizarre. And that's what they're trying to promote. And of course, the whole idea is to abscond with the concept of large comets in the solar system causing damage when they come by Earth. And so my book goes into a lot of detail. And so it's very important to understand also that there have been many major earth-shattering celestially caused events in the past 10,000 years, much after their 12,000 year ago date. And these people are coming with a tremendous amount of really great information, but then coming to the wrong conclusion. And that's the punchline. And so any great disinformation program has pawns. People are being used, and it has a lot of good information. That's the hook. But the punchline is the disinformation. So what you walk away with, the punchline is totally false information. And that's what the book is about, is trying to steer this. I had to do this during the millennium bug time, during the 2012 Mayan calendar, we're all going to die, through all the 1990s and the 2000s, the Planet X stuff, the Hale-Bopp era, all of these massive disinformation campaigns. I've been front and center trying to bring sanity to the story so the public really understands what's going on. So here we are again with disinformation about what comets are, how they work, what they do, what they can't do, and the false information coming out of the standard science community. At any rate, while I'm out of time, we'll be back next week, same time, same station, where I've been commercial-free for 23 years now. All of the archives on my webpage. Once again, my webpage is jmccsci.com, jmccwaterfilters.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.